VentureCast.
Roll out to all of you. You know what we could do? We could do it like a like what do you do with your therapist? Word association. Ready? So I'll just say a word, and you guys say the first word to come to mind. Okay? Like let's practice. Ready?
You think that's what therapy is? By the way,
yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure.
I'm playing that's... word association.
So I'm gonna.
That's the best part of the whole pod. That's the header.
I'm gonna say, ready? 1, 2, 3. Sun,
moon,
mother. They're all gonna be mother for me, Tim. You said it was therapy.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Fellas, how are you with the newest member of the team, Romeo?
Yes, I brought the puppy today.
Wagon.
He's got a lot of strong opinions about 2003.
He's got thoughts, does he?
He was like, Tim's selection for this year sucks. I need to come in.
So speaking of dogs, we got our host has got the hair of the dog. He is sick as a dog. Mr. Tim Plaine. This podcast is being recorded in battle conditions in Asheville, North Carolina.
Right, but not hair of the dog usually implies that I've had a hard night drinking.
Well, I was trying to make you cooler than you are. I know.
I am just like sick. Like,
well, you made the mistake of taking children on a trip. That'll do it every time.
Oh yeah, man, yeah. Petri dish.
Five days on a bus with 75 seniors in high school hitting DC, but now I am back. I am sick. I had a 101.5 fever on Sunday, and I don't think 52-year-olds are supposed to get fevers that high. I don't know.
That's a bad fever for men of a certain age.
I had shivers and it was a mess. So
did you have a little bell you could ring to get stuff for yourself?
Dude, I went to bed at 4 p.m. Sunday night and woke up at noon. Didn't get out of bed till noon on Monday. I mean, I was a wreck. Helen's like, should I check on him?
That's funny. Then she decided to not to. That's it. No, that's
dude, listen,
quality.
Don't mess with success.
Yeah. So the podcast, it's now, we've never cut it this tight before, gentlemen. It is 6:37 on Tuesday night. This thing needs to be posted by 8 a.m. So no edits.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you are hearing is the raw, unexpurgated director's cut of the 2003
that's
podcast.
So, that's why it's 7 hours. Typically, that's about how long it takes us to get an hour of usable content.
Wait till you hear how smooth we are in one take. This is going to be great.
Tim,
I'm going to remind you now that you're coughing and snuffling.
I'm so sorry.
Try to keep that to a minimum.
Well, and I think what we need to do is just all promise each other this is going to be the sad, somber podcast tonight. We're not going to make each other laugh at all. It's just going to be gentle.
So nothing different for our listeners. No laughing.
Okay, that almost.
All right, I'll try.
So this is, I'm bringing you the Michael Jordan flu game right now.
As
the co-host. And let's get started right off the bat. With the Grammy-winning album of 2003, Ben Barton, what's our constant complaint about the Grammy voters?
Too old, go with the, and too weird. But basically, they go with the retro acts.
Excellent.
It's the Grammy winner.
Speaker Box, The Love Below by Outkast.
Surely this will be different.
Ready for action, nip it in the bud, we never relaxing. Outcast is everlasting, not clashing, not at all. But see, my nigga went to do a little acting. Now that's for anyone asking. Give me one and pass him. Drip, drip, drop, there it goes, an orgasm. Now you coming out the side of your face, we tapping right into your memory banks. Thanks. So click at the ticket, let's see your seatbelt fastened. Trunk rattling, like 2 midgets in the back seat wrestling. Speaker box vibrate the tag, make it sound like aluminum cans in a bag. But I know y'all wanted that 808, can you feel that BASS bass? But I know y'all wanted that 808, can you feel that? at BASS Base.
I like the way you move.
Was this a makeup call? Did they really regret not picking the previous Outkast album?
I have no idea, but
this album was a much, 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 much bigger hit. And also the Hey Ya was a crossover hit where they were like, well, that sounds like a Prince song. And that was what hooked them for sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How great does that sound? I mean,
my God, I forget. I mean, so the chorus is so unbelievably catchy. The chorus is such an earworm that you forget how great the verse is.
So
and
I don't know.
Honestly, sounds like a different song.
I don't know if you remember the video, but the video features a particularly attractive woman standing next to an automobile for the vast majority of it. And my friend told me a hilarious story of the woman who was in the video worked out in the same gym that he did in Atlanta.
Okay.
And he tried to make a move by going up to her and saying, "Hey girl, I saw your video." And she's like, "Oh, you mean the Outkast video?" He's like, no, I mean your video." Sadly, it didn't work. She was like, "Thank you very much."
Aww.
I just love that. I love that, like, to run into the woman in the Way You Move video is just part of his life story. Pretty good.
Now I gotta Google that. The Way You Move video. Got it. I wonder what she's doing now. Maybe some listener will bump into her at another Atlanta workout club. Maybe
my guess is real estate. That's my guess.
Okay. Good call. Let's get into the events of 2003. You may recall a war against Iraq, Saddam Hussein being captured by the United States Army. Ben Barton, where was he when he was captured?
I believe the technical term is spider hole. Isn't that where he was? Wasn't he in a spider hole?
He was in a spider hole.
And Timmy, I get confused sometimes with movies. Did he become Spider-Man? Is that what happened?
Did he
get bit by a radioactive Iraqi spider?
Nope. He was hiding in a spider hole with, I think, $500,000 of U.S. banknotes, an AK-47, and a Glock. And a U.S. Army soldier whacked him in the mouth with the butt of his M16 and pulled him out of the spider hole. And then...
That's like finding the boardwalk Monopoly piece in McDonald's Monopoly. I mean, when you're like,
oh yeah, no, dude.
When your spider hole has Saddam Hussein in it, you're like, hey, I win.
Honestly, that's such a great call, Jeff. And also that guy, the sergeant was like, dude, did you clear all the holes? He was like, yeah, sure, I did. He's like, don't bullshit me with the clear all. Like, get in there, make sure. He's like, dude, they're all just filled with cobwebs. What are you doing? Like, seriously, this is my job now. My current working job is to go through and look at dirty holes. And he's like, yeah, that's your job.
That's your job.
Stop lip. And then he's like, hey, I found some.
Oh, God.
Good stuff. Ben, I'm also going to come at you for this. In June 23rd, the Supreme Court announced that it's a ruling on affirmative action. Do you remember the ruling in 2003?
Yeah, that's the Michigan case, right?
Yes.
I forgot the name. Maybe it's Bollinger? Maybe it's Gooder Bollinger, something like that? Okay. Anyhow, that's a really famous one. Seriously endangered in your 2022. That seems very, very likely to go next term.
So affirmative action was upheld in 2003. That one, an institution could take race into consideration along with other factors, in determining the makeup of their student body in higher education.
Yeah, and it's a great story. Like, Michigan laid the groundwork for it. They knew there was going to be a lawsuit. They did all of the work. They had a bunch of studies underlaying it. They built like the perfect system. It wasn't one where they just threw it at the wall and then they just buried the Supreme Court under data and analysis showing. It'll be a shame if and when the Supreme Court gets rid of it. I mean, on the other hand, so here's what I'll say though, is that the Michigan studies really showed broad diversity. And it's not good to basically just boil it down and be like, all that matters is racial diversity. I mean, right. Racial diversity is amazing, and I'm not anti that. Of course, I'm super pro gender diversity too, but you really want to get a full mix of folks, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that being said, to get a full mix of folks, you pretty much have to take race into account. I mean, look what happened in Texas and California. If you don't take race into account, bad things happen pretty quick.
Yeah, the year after the University of California was prevented from keeping from using race as a consideration, only 14 African American men were accepted to the University of California, Berkeley in the incoming class the next 14. Year. 14 individual people.
Yeah.
That's not the diversity you're looking for.
Not a lot. All right. We also have this bizarre non sequitur, Johnny Depp.
That is a non sequitur.
Earns an Oscar nomination for supporting actor. What role?
It's got to be Pirates, right?
Is it
Pirates of the Caribbean, where he played Keith Richards?
Yeah. And so I ask you, was that really a Keith Richards impersonation?
Oh my God, down to the like skeletons hanging from his head. I mean, it's so good that Keith Richards kind of became Johnny Depp doing him. After that, like Keith Richards became more like Johnny Depp's Keith Richards after seeing that movie than he was before the movie came out. It's
and Depp
so
was
great.
Clear about it too. He's been like, oh yeah, that's Keith Richards.
He's like, I'm doing this as Keith Richards.
Yeah, totally.
It was a great call. It made the movie like so much more entertaining to have that just be buried. Like, because Keith Richards, you could argue, is the closest thing we've had in the modern Western world to a pirate. You know, he keeps weird hours. He takes what he wants. He doesn't play by anybody's rules. Okay. Like, he's beloved everywhere he goes, even though he's a scallywag. I mean, I thought that was a brilliant move on Depp's part.
Wait, so when you guys saw the movie, so I saw the movie and I thought, oh, Johnny Depp is brilliant. I never thought of Keith Richards because I didn't.
Oh, I did five seconds. Totally. Like, he walked on stage and said his first line and I turned to somebody. It was like, Keith Richards. Awesome. And then it just got better after that.
Oh, that's hilarious that you had that right from the get-go. That's awesome. I wonder if there's got to be someone on YouTube who's put together like videos comparing like a side.
Oh, like an A and B?
Yeah.
I'm sure there is.
I'm gonna go check that out.
You know what? I did that for Megan Slankard and the female lead in Tangled, the Disney movie.
Yes, yes.
You remember Tangled, the Rapunzel?
Sure.
You cannot, if you know Megan, you cannot watch that movie and not think that they like somebody knows her, the Disney crew, because
that's hilarious.
The AB of those two people is hilarious.
Oh, awesome. All right. Sad news. And I'm sure I'm going to ask you to reach back into your memories, but it was the 2003 where we had the Station nightclub fire. In Warwick, Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah. Great White.
Remember the story. Great White took the stage and they had some pyrotechnics go off towards the side. And the I guess it was the speaker's insulation or something about the sound for the room that caught on fire. And within a minute, the stage was just engulfed.
Well, also the ceiling, a low ceiling, and it wasn't fire protected. Like the ceiling burst into flames almost instantly too.
100 people died in that fire. I think 300 had some sort of injury from it. So just a horrible, horrible night. And I'm wondering, like, I know surely before 2003, I was going into clubs to see bands, and I would make a mental note of the exits. And I'm wondering, can you think, I guess you don't have to mention any names, but can you think of any places you've played or seen concerts where you're like, oh, dear God, if anything were to go haywire?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most places have one door in the front, you know, like it's a long hallway. Yeah, the 12 Galaxies in San Francisco, which is no longer with us, felt like a fire trap every time I went into it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
that
so one. I don't worry about fires, but we had... several different experiences in Bonnaroo where basically they do a really nice job at Bonnaroo. They have a separate pit area that you have to wait in line for. But if the act gets big enough,
yeah,
it can be a real mess getting into the pit. And we had one, and the thing that made it super noticeable was that it was a couple's thing. So India was there and a couple of other female friends were there. And the four guys that I was with, we formed like a circle with the women in the middle, and we were still just like bobbing in a sea of humanity. And like super, super, super tight. And so that gets a little frightening.
Yeah, I've been to a couple punk shows like that for sure.
Do you get out or do you stay with it and go with it?
You can't go anywhere.
You can't go anywhere.
It's such a massive humanity that you just like hope that it ends.
You just have to stay zen and breathe and keep your arms away from you. I don't like it. I'm not and I'm less likely to, Ben is braver than I am. I'm less likely now to put myself in that situation. I'm like, you know, it looks okay from the 50-yard line too. So,
yeah, I don't know if I like people that much to be there. Although I will say, you know who I like? Dan Meir. Listener Dan Meir texted us. And I hate the fact that you guys aren't on the Twitter feed. So you don't get messages. You don't get the Facebook messages. But he wrote to us and he said, hey, guys, I've been catching up on the podcast during my runs. Love to hear music and laugh along with you. Missed hearing you today on my 17 miler since I actually caught up last week. So I said, oh my God, great. You've been listening for that long and you've caught up. This is great. And he says, I did want to say thanks for bringing in level 42. Not sure if you're serious or doing it for laughs, but they're one of my favorite bands, especially the stuff before Something About You. And quiet, please. And especially thanks for being relatable humans when lots of folks aren't. So
thanks, Dan.
Timmy, the thing that I love is you start by saying, since you can not verify that this is a real person, you have no access to this information. There's a guy whose name is Dan Meir. And this guy, I'm going to give him personal details so you think it's real. He runs 17 miles. And it's weird. He loves level 42. These are the things that you need to know about Dan Meir.
Very specific with the mileage. If I said 10 miles, you would have doubted.
No, the 17 miles really brought it to me, but I'm on to you, man. I am on to you. By the way, he's either made up by you or he's like a level 42 underling. Maybe he's in the band.
He might actually be the manager of level 42.
This guy, I mean, this guy has to be our vintage, right? Because he knows he's pre Something About You level 42.
Yeah, that's a level, all right.
That really is. That's like level 41.
Dan, to clarify, my love for level 42 is real.
We have no doubt about your love, Timmy.
There are some non-believers on the podcast. Although I think, Ben, you've run marathons before, right?
I have, yeah. 17 miles is a long way.
Jeff, have you ever run 17 miles?
No, 13 and a half is my longest.
Well, 17 miles, Dan, so... I'm hoping you're on a long run right now listening to this, and the 50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys want you to let you know to keep on plugging away.
Because there's something about you. Let's go.
And we're back.
Nice. Let's smooth as glass.
I thought of going to Syracuse.
That's nice.
And their journalism school, broadcast journalism. But anyways, we're going to get to our number one selling album of 2003. Quite a 1-2 punch here with the Grammy on the number one.
It's the number one album.
Get Rich or Die Tryin' by 50 Cent.
Go, 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 shawty. It's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip Bacardi like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give a fuck, it's not your birthday. You'll find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got
that. Damn, and Dre, Eminem was the number one hit last year, right?
Yeah.
Dre is just on fire. On fire.
Yeah. When does he roll out his headphones?
It's another 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
Not far? Okay.
You remember it's during the All-Star game. Like it's during the Home Run Derby and they get Iovine, LeBron James, and Dr. Dre in the booth with Chris Berman. And he's like, so I'm here with three people who I don't know and they're going to plug something. And like they throw the mic to LeBron. He's like, I'm here with my good friend, Jimmy Iovine. And we're talking about Beats headphones. It was the funniest attempt to just like casually, like to do like an NBA on TNT style rollout of Beats headphones. I got to find that on YouTube and watch it again. I was laughing so hard.
That is great.
Is this album cover the high point of the toxic masculine gangster rap nadir? Is the 50 Cent album cover with the bullet holes like the low point?
I don't know, man. There's some DMX ones where they're kind of
like
snarling. But yeah, no, with the bullet holes is a lot here for sure.
Yep.
And also, it depends how you feel about it. I mean, the Can't Wait to Die or whatever the Biggie Smalls record.
Well, this one's called Get Rich or Die Trying. That's the name of this record.
At least it has something that's not just dying. There's another option.
That's true.
Get rich.
Indeed.
Yeah. Get rich.
There's a great, I think I've already mentioned it on this podcast before, but Tim Fight is another Chicago rapper, and he has a hilarious parody song about this album cover called I Got Shot. And it's about, like, you know, having his A&R guy shoot him in the ass so that he can sell more records. It's so funny. I got to find it for you guys at some point. Ben, but yeah, it's great.
Ben, did you notice Jeff saying, I don't know if I've mentioned this on this podcast or not, as if we've become just another podcast.
No, I meant on our podcast, not
this podcast.
It is true. I just guested on our new friends' podcast. They do a very cool show where they take one artist at a time, and then they decide what the top three songs are.
This is Bill Noto's podcast.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So
and y'all did Beck.
He did Beck, and then they had this thing called Voice of Dissent. The podcast is called The Very Best, and if you disagree with them, they'll let you go on a diatribe. So they did Beck, and they did not mention any songs from Odelay. So that was my complaint. But they did a good job. They're fun. It's a fun show. You guys should all check it out.
You know, you picked Sea Change last week, and I wasn't familiar with it. So on the 8-hour bus ride to Washington, D.C., where 72 seniors got me sick, I listened to Sea Change, and it was great.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, I'm a fan.
Really terrific stuff. And we drove, was it 81 north in the western part of Virginia? It's just that long stretch of highway where nothing happens.
Oh, dude, and you joined it late because you come from Carolina. Oh, right. I mean, like from Knoxville, it's an hour and a half to the border of Virginia, and then it's forever.
It's forever.
It never is.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the weird places on the East Coast where you can drive in an interstate for a really long time and stay in the same state.
Well, you like the West Coast diagonal. Oh, yeah, no, let alone Texas.
West Coast is just full of those moments. Like Nebraska on 80 is like 8 time zones. It's forever. But 81 in Virginia is the closest thing on the East Coast for sure.
All right, well, real quick, as long as I've brought DC up so perfectly, one or two favorite things that you have to hit when you're in DC. Ben or Jeff, who wants to go first?
The African American History Museum, which is new, is just fantastic.
Amazing.
Off the hook. Can't recommend highly enough.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
So great. Jeff?
The Holocaust Museum
is devastating. And we do those back to back. It's like, here's DC, boom and boom.
And then you scrape them off the ground and pour them back in the van for the long drive home. That's great.
The Library of Congress is the most beautiful building in DC. Walking into that main hall.
Yeah, it's nice.
Looking up at the ceiling. Knocks me out every single time. Anything overrated in DC?
Besides the government? I mean, I don't know what you're fishing for there. I mean, I grew up there. I think it's all a little overrated, to be honest. Like, people who live in DC assume nothing else happens of substance anywhere else in the world. Sure. And they talk in acronyms. Like, when I come home and have lunch with my friends, they're like, well, the RNCO did the BOB at the JOBY. And I'm just like, the hell are you all talking about? And they say they have this like insider culture, lingo slang. Yeah, Beltway culture. As somebody who moved away 30 years ago, when I come back home, it feels very self-referential and navel-gazy and a little bit out of touch. I think that's okay. A fair criticism of DC is that it is fascinated with itself to the point of where I'm mildly irritated.
Right, right.
It's also like for a world capital, it's weirdly like Paris, London, and yeah. Tokyo are DC, New York, and LA. Mexico City's yeah, like that yeah. too, where it's like all the biggest businesses are there, all the entertainment's there, and the government's there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and we don't do that at all.
Yeah,
it's
DC
so
is just weirdly just this, like one part of it sucked out and placed there.
Right, right. Yeah, it's really bizarre. Brazil's like that, isn't it? Like,
yeah, totally Brasilia.
Brasilia is just government here. All right, I've got to get to a new segment.
Ooh.
As I was
bringing a new segment with the fever. I'm
it's
impressed.
Timmy's fever dream.
This comes yeah. from a fever dream. I was like, well, you know, we've done births of 2003 and deaths. What if they had to figure out dead or alive? Was this person born in 2003 or did this person die in 2003?
That I can do.
Because there I was on my deathbed, not knowing if I would make it. So I'm going to give you the clues. You have to figure out who the person is. It is a person who either was born in 2003 or who died in 2003.
This is a fantastic little wrinkle. I love this.
Still boycotting.
So, by the way, I was working through the ad placements for Electrocast. And
thank you, Electrocast.
And listening to earlier versions of this, Ben, where you were cleaning up in this little contest back in the day.
He doesn't like to lose. He lost once and then he boycotted for the rest of the episode.
Here we go. Singer, Tryon, North Carolina, female, black, jazz, soul, Jay Tandon. So this. I knew it was going to be hard. So this
is okay. hard.
This person died.
Okay. In 2003
from Tryon, North Carolina.
Tryon, North Carolina.
Yeah. Name a black jazz soul singer.
Who's dead?
Jazz soul.
Etta James.
No. Yeah. I didn't know really how to describe her genre. If Jay Tandon is listening right now, he's
Nina Simone.
Nina Simone is correct.
Oh, look at that.
All right. Next person. Singer.
Nina Simone. No, I'm kidding.
Female. Filipino. Traitor. Driver's license.
Like traitor to a cause or traitor of
yes,
goods and services?
Traitor to a okay. cause. Driver's license. Deja vu.
What in the
oh,
hell?
Oh, is it Olivia Rodrigo?
It is Olivia
oh,
Rodrigo.
Oh, nicely nice done.
He was born in 2003. If Flannery ever
She's fantastic, by the way.
She's so great. Okay.
Timmy, you and I are making a deal where you're going to choose her record when we get there.
Oh, I've already got it.
Good.
All right, let's see. Huh. I'm going to go with this guy. Singer, male, black,
Luther Vandross,
soul, large.
I still stick with Luther Vandross.
Sex.
What'd you say?
Sex.
Sex, large, sex, stole.
Soul.
Okay.
Male, foreplay.
Marvin Gaye? No, he died in 1986.
No.
Foreplay.
Ah, it's Barry White.
Oh, you gotta do release all the snakes from a Simpsons episode where he helps Lisa save the snakes from Whacking Day.
I
listened to Barry White this morning. That's disappointing. I should have got
that's
that.
That's a
yeah.
shame. That's a shame. All right, well, let's get to our three albums. Our three albums. Who goes first?
think it's you, Jeff.
All right. So sometimes you'll be shocked to hear that I get things wrong. I know it'll become to an enormous surprise to the two of you and to our listeners that I'm occasionally wrong. This is a band I was wrong about, blew off and just couldn't find my way into until they had been pretty popular for 5 or 6 years. And I have gone back and really fallen in love with this record. And the reason I couldn't do it is because sometimes the hype around a band is so much or is so seemingly so stylized that I get that kind of arms folded. We'll see about that response to them before I even hear them.
Wait, like, they're stylized or the hype is stylized?
The hype is so stylized, wow. Right? Like when something's overhyped in advance for me, I'm a contrarian, right? Like I'm a Gen X guy. Like if you tell me you're about to have the greatest thing ever, I'm like, well, we will see about that, right? For example, dear listeners, Ben is traveling to Copenhagen next week. And where are you going, Ben?
I forgot to ask him about this. Yes.
Yes.
Where are you going? As part of your
Canon and Dahlia and her boyfriend are going to go to Noma, Copenhagen, which is sometimes ranked the best restaurant in the world.
Right. My immediate reaction to that, Ben telling me that was not, I'm so glad for my friend that he gets to go do this thing. My reaction in my head was like, oh, college boy. Like, I can't help it. I can't help it. I hear that Ben wants to go to the number one restaurant in the world. What I want to do is stand outside the number one restaurant in the world with my arms folded and go, and then go snarky. Get a hot dog and be snarky about it, right?
Yeah.
So this band, the problem with this band is they had an unbelievable background story. And I mean unbelievable in the truest sense of the word. It sounded too good to be true. You've got three brothers and a first cousin whose dad is an itinerant Pentecostal preacher. And they are homeschooled by their mother as they are driven around the American South in their childhood in a broken down Oldsmobile, wherever the dad can get a revival tent preaching gig. These guys decide to become a rock and roll band, get a major label deal and put out a record. Now that is a great story, but I couldn't help but feel like, oh, come on, right? Like, I mean, it's just too perfect that a bunch of dudes that grew up like following their dad's religious epiphanies around the American South would become a rock and roll band. That plus the fact that they name checked Thin Lizzy, the Rolling Stones and the Clash, crossed with the Pixies and the Velvet Underground. It sounded like it was made in a lab for rock critics to love. First, this record came out, especially in Europe, people went crazy. The New Music Express review of this debut record said that this is the record the Rolling Stones have been trying to make since 1968. That's heavy praise. So I gave it a cursory listen and I was like, nah, that's fine, but whatever. And the problem was the second record was not very good. And the third record was a big experimental swing and miss. Two or three really great tracks and a bunch of half-baked, half-cooked ideas. So I never really had an opportunity to get back on the train. In the fourth record, their fourth record came out in 2008. And I actually put it on by accident. I think maybe Ben sent it to me or somebody told me to listen to it. And I was grading papers and I just put it on. And by the fifth song, I was like, oh, I love this. Like, where has this been my whole life?
Right.
And went back to the first record and I love it. It's actually my favorite Kings of Leon record, which is my band of for 2003. Youth and Young Manhood, made by three brothers and a first cousin in 2003. They put out an EP with a bunch of these songs on it, but they re-recorded it and did a better version of it. This is a great little kick-ass rock and roll record. I love how unassuming it is. I love how tight the recording is. There's almost no reverb on it. It sounds like it was recorded with one microphone in a half an hour, but not in a lo-fi way, but just in a very basic, simplistic, like these guys are just learning how to play. And rather than cover it all up with a bunch of overdubs and crap, you just hear a bunch of kids learning how to play music together. The I believe the bass player is 15 years old when this is recorded, and he's putting dots on the frets to know where to put his hands because he's such a rudimentary player.
Wow.
Doesn't matter at all because these guys are great songwriters. They have great taste and they don't get in their way, right? And they do get in their way in albums 2 and 3. Like, it's a little too much. And then I really love that fourth record. It's like Only for the Night or whatever it's called. Anyway, Kings and Leon go on to be a huge band. They fall apart. They come back together, they fall apart. But I think the place to start is this great little 12-song, 35-minute record with one little three-minute banger after another. Because of where I live, I'm going to play California Waiting for my song. But there's a bunch of great little songs on this record. And if you love Kings of Leon, I get it. If you don't really like Kings of Leon, because like me, you avoided the hype and then they became too big, you're missing out, because this is great stuff. And here's California Waiting from the first Kings of Leon record.
Youth and Young Manhood by Kings of Leon.
Clover pulling overtime. I feel too close to be a losing touch. I come on in, what am I giving up?
Sorry, I can't grab the little fader button. That's being a pain in the ass. So that's a my bad edit, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. And it's okay because they're already forgiving us because I'm sick. Ben, did you send the fourth album to Jeff?
Oh, dude. So I'm going to take a little mini victory lap here.
Yeah.
On multiple occasions, I've been like, Jeff pressed this on me and he was right. And that's why I love this. This was one where I really wore him out and I couldn't believe that he didn't like this first record. Like, I was really into this first record. Jeff, if you will give the first, just give 5 seconds of Genius, which is my favorite song on it.
Oh, that's a great song.
Listen to the guitar part.
It's so good. Hold on a second. Here we go. That's so great.
Got
so
my great. Attention. So
and his, like, the singing. And one of the things that's hard is that, and Jeff's right, the second and third records, I mean, first of all, it's really hard to put out one good record. And then it's especially hard to follow it. The band that I have here, their second that I'm going to pick here, it's their debut album this year too, and their second album's not as good. It's just really, really hard to do it. Guitar parts are crisp, and the singing in particular, though, he's got this round, mumbling,
man.
like low moan to it. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, just, I love it.
And when he cuts loose, you can really hear the Vedder comparison. But it's when he's choked in that I love it the most. Like his restrained parts on the verses are great.
And there's a lot of great moments of restraint. Like Holy Rover Novocaine is all about tension and release. Molly's Chambers, same thing.
Yep.
It's a great record. And you're right. It must have been, it was a tough year for me too. Like, this is the divorce year, and this is a feel good, like, have a good time record. And I was not having a whole lot of good time in 2003. Fair. So I could have just been that. And I was really happy to be able to go back and like this record. Like, it made me really happy to rediscover it. And this is definitely a Ben victory for sure.
Yeah, and
it's a great record.
It's an old school, new school Southern rock record.
Yeah, man.
It's really got a lot of Southern rock flair to it, which made me happy.
Yeah, it's like Leonard Strokes Skinner meets Pearl Jam. Like, there's a whole bunch of really great ingredients in this record.
Play Bonnaroo is a tiny act in 2004, headliner in 2010.
There you go. That's fun.
I remember reading like the New York Times, you know, back in the day when I would get the Sunday New York Times, and they had a big article. So as you were describing this family and this Pentecostal minister, I'm like, wait a minute, this sounds really familiar. And I remember it from the article more so than the music. So I never bought the album. Oh, it's a great article though.
Yeah, and I mean, you're not supposed to love the big hits of a band that's like your cult band, but 2008, like that Use Somebody song kicks ass. Yeah. I even really like Sex on Fire. Whenever that song comes on, I'm singing along. It's
there's a song called Sex on Fire?
Yeah, and it's such a sing-along. I mean, I've made an ass of myself, I'm sure, okay, at many a red light going like, your sex is on fire. It's great. It's great.
All right. Nicely done. Ben Barton, what are you picking for 2003?
I'm picking my favorite album of 2003, even including the Outkast record. I almost chose my favorite song from this record for 2003. I'm super pleased to have the chance to choose it today. The Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs have put out two different EPs before 2003. They hook up with Dave and they're getting a lot of buzz. They're a fantastic live act. There's a huge rush to try and sign them. They declined to sign with a label. They get Dave Sitek, who is not famous at all. This is of the soon to be TV on the radio fame, but not famous at all. He literally had like been a roadie and videotaped them on their tour on these EPs. They bring him into the studio. They just do it their own way. They're like, it's us, it's Sitek, we're gonna record it. And they cut the entire record and they're planning and putting it out on their shitty Chicago indie label. Interscope comes in and this is again, Interscope, the same year that they're putting out 50 Cent, the A&R guys at Interscope are like, listen, we're not gonna touch it. We're gonna put it out exactly the way you want. You have complete artistic control, sign them. It's a gigantic hit. Medium-sized hit. The Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs are the part of three different large-scale music trends in the early 2000s. First, weirdly, they are a guitar drum only band. Karen O is the singer, but that they're a trio where there's only two dudes who play instruments. There's the guitarist Mark Zinner, and I can't remember the name of the drummer. So they're actually in the same category as the Black Peas and the White Stripes.
Wow.
Even though they don't appear to be.
Yeah.
But they are, because they don't have a bassist. And Jeff will know, first of all, Jeff will be mad because they don't have a bassist. But second, when you have just two instruments, you've really got to fill a lot of space and you got to work super hard to do it. And also you get tired of doing it, which is why the Black Keys records come with a bassist and a whole horn. By the time the Black Keys are done, they've got a horn section. It's like an orchestra's with them. It's like, I need 38 dudes behind me. I never want to just carry everything myself.
They should really be called All the Keys at this point, that band. They've got like everybody up there. They're like White Stripes.
The White Stripes stayed a duo, but I mean, but every other band that he was in was not a duo. They are part of the New York garage rock, or really just basically, remember, we've gone through these series where like in Seattle, they signed everybody, in London, they signed everybody. New York in the 2000-2003 range, they're signing every band that can play. So
is this like Jet?
No, that's later. So it's the Strokes, Interpol, LCD Sound System, Vampire Weekend, and the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs all get signed and all put out records.
Okay.
And it's a little bit weird to group those because you're like, those actually don't seem like they're all the same bands, but they are all from the same basic scene. They all get signed. And I guess career-wise, Vampire Weekend is my favorite. This year-wise, though, it's definitely Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs. Like, I just thought this was fantastic. And they're female-fronted punk band. So they're right there with Slater Kinney and Le Tigre and the other things that are happening. And it's actually a little bit more like Le Tigre because it's really avant-garde as much as it is punk. So Karen Oh is half Korean, half American, born in South Korea, comes over here, goes to Oberlin. It's an Oberlin band, 2/3 of the band is from Oberlin. And they're weird art kids at Oberlin.
Let's go, yeah.
But she transfers to NYU, finds a third member of the band, hauls in the other dudes from Oberlin. They come back and they're just doing this crazy show. They're a legendary live act, which I sadly did not have a chance to see in their heyday. When you are a duo, there's a couple of different ways to do it. The guitar and the drum both have to take up a lot of space. So one way you can do it is the Black Keys, White Stripes way, which is where you just fuzz out the guitar and you just go maximalist in terms of the Led Zeppelin sound of it. It's like just a total blues sound where you're trying to play the bass and the guitar at the same time. The other way you can do it is you can, and I'm not saying this guy's the Edge, I'm just saying you can do it the way U2 does it, where you use technology to fill in the space. And that's what's so really, really, really amazing about this record. It has both. There are songs that are just these big, broad, banging sort of like guitar parts. But then there are other ones where he's using looping and he plays a guitar part and he plays another guitar part on top of it. He plays another guitar part on top of it. And that's how he fills all of the space. And that's my favorite song. Maps is my favorite song from this record. Now, Maps is the song everybody's heard on this record.
Okay.
It wasn't released as a single to 2004. It's the third single off of this record, which is kind of insane. It was my favorite song immediately for a personal reason that I'm going to share. In 2003, our daughter Dahlia Claire is 2 turning into 3, and our daughter Georgia Poe is just born. It's her first year of life. It is also the beginning of India Kincannon's political career.
Hey now.
So we moved to Knoxville, Tennessee in 2001. We're there for 2 years. We've made some good friends. India's had a good time staying home. But this is a bless her heart and no one could blame her. She was done staying home. She
yeah.
had enough. She really badly wanted to get back to work. And when we lived in Arizona, she went to Princeton for public policy school and then she worked for the legislature there. She was like, you know what? It's really hard to get anything done as a policy person. You know how you get things done is you get elected. You convince people, you get elected. Then you get to go in and do the things that you want to do because you've actually convinced people that they're a good idea. Our local school board member retires. India Kincannon joins a 6-person crowd to try and run for this seat, having lived in Knoxville, Tennessee for 2 years.
Okay.
She takes 9 months and knocks on every door of every voter in this in the voting area.
Like it, she in was Knoxville? Just she really oh, got yeah, to the, every door?
Oh dude. She this is so this is 2000 to, huh? This is 2002 and 2003. This is before Obama runs. She hires a data analyst. She gets the data analyst to go to the election thing where nobody had ever heard of this with CDs, and he burned discs of the voting registrations for everybody in the district and their voting history. Then she made the guy create an algorithm and put the people in order. She had a list of the voters in order from most likely to vote to least likely to vote. And she just went down that list and knocked on everybody. It was amazing.
Just based on whether, not who they voted for, but whether they actually got to the polls.
Likely it's the thing of, it was a nonpartisan race and nobody knew who the hell she was anyways.
Yeah, right.
And it also was a less partisan time. Now she would have, now they sort it by likely voter also.
Yeah, right. Huh.
Dude, she just worked and worked and worked and worked. It's an amazing story of triumph, and I am not trying to take that away. That being said, Maps is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful love song between Karen O and her then boyfriend, where he's in another band and he's getting signed and he's like really, really trying hard to make it in the music business. And she's trying to convince him that that's not the love that he needs. And the chorus is, wait, they don't love you like I love you. Wait, they don't love you like I love you. Stay with me. That's the chorus of the song. And this is a song that just meant a lot to me that year. I listened to this song over and over and over again. Partially to come to grips with this, with India. And I feel like I've done a pretty good job of it. I've been a pretty supportive political husband. And also I recognize that it makes her super happy. That being said, you know, it's hard. It's a hard thing to have your spouse or anybody you love be so outward focused and to share so much of their life energy and love with other people. Jeff, if you will start at minute 1 of Maps, right at 100, we'll get a verse, we'll get a chorus, and then you'll get this amazing bridge where you can hear the guitarist go.
Fever to Tell by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
Here, no bass at all, just guitar drums.
Made up, don't stress.
So Ben, did she ever have to have a conversation with you like that was like, hey, you're not supporting me enough in this?
How dare you, Timmy? No, the short answer to that is no. I've been pretty good all the way along.
Yeah.
She would have to have conversations with me like, you're wearing yourself out. You need to like take it slow. Like some of the times that I was trying to be supportive, I would tip over into being just in a full lather.
Yeah. But it is because my wife is academic dean and she puts herself out there and she's, you know, helping to run a school. And I'm like, why don't you just, you know, come back and just be a classroom teacher and, you know, oversee croquet in the afternoons or something like that. We actually don't have a croquet team. That's the joke. But she has.
But if you did, somehow one of the two of you would be in charge of it for sure.
But she has a wonderful ambition and she has wonderful gifts that she thinks should be shared and that need to be shared in order for the school to be the best it can be. And it's like, yeah, how can you not support that? It's hard. Cause what?
Yeah, no, the harder one, and now we're really getting into personal, but when she decided to run for mayor, that was a tough conversation to have with our daughters.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Our daughters were in high school. And my younger daughter's a big introvert. And she was like the first person who's like, I hear your mom's running for mayor. I'm just going to crawl under my desk. And my older daughter, it was your senior year. And she was like, I just assume, you know, you're not doing this my senior year. And it was an amazing conversation. I was like, look, I want to make sure that you understand that we hear you. But I also want you to want to be clear. And I'm going to say with my outside voice, like, she can't, these opportunities don't come every year.
Right.
She can't run next year. She can't run when you graduate. I mean, she could, but yeah. I mean, like, she's got a chance to be mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee right now. It's her dream job.
Yeah.
And listen, if and when it's your time with your dream, you tell us and I've got your back. I'll do whatever you need. But
right.
that goes for everybody in the family. You know what I mean? And so we just had a really good, for me, it was a really good conversation.
My dream is you stop playing Radiohead. Forever. That's my dream. Good stuff, Ben. Jeff, what do you got to say?
I mean, what else is there to say? I like this record a lot. I liked It's Blitz, even the third one where they're squishing the egg on the cover. I mean, this is a good band. I actually randomly saw them too, Ben.
Is that true? Where'd you see them?
At the BFD. Like, they used to do this big let's have 47 bands at Shoreline. They can each play for 15 minutes, you know, at the start off the summer. And
Was it 2004? When did you
Yeah, it was this year or the next year, like the summer they toured this. Yeah. They were great. They were one of the few things I remember about that day. I mean, they were great. And this, like you said, you know, there was a point in the duo thing where the absence of Low End was just cantankerous. Like, there was that mini moment where, like, I mean, and as a bass player, like, I went to plenty, I started hearing about all these sessions where, like, you know, they're not going to bring a bass player because it needs to sound modern. And the difference between sounding modern and sounding shitty, for me, like, the low, there's a reason we all love the low end. Like, it completes the sound. So I'm happy that we've moved through that moment in record production.
But oh, yeah. It's not like they tour with the bassist now.
Yeah, of course they do, because, you know, partly because they probably have hearing loss and they need it. I mean, that's the other thing that I think is so funny. It's like, as you get older, you can't hear as much on the high end. So, like, we better put something in there that my ears can still hear. And so you put in a low end, you know, like, you know, legacy rock bands sound more and more and more boomy as they get deafer and deafer. You know?
That is brilliant.
I don't mean to, like, first of all, let me just say, Karen O's great. She's fantastic. Yeah. The lyrics are amazing. Her voice is beautiful. She's the front to the band. So I'm not trying to say that it's the guitarist band. That being said, he's not technically amazing.
No, but he's
super innovative, especially on this record. This is one of the things that's harder, why the second and the third aren't quite as good, is like, it's only so many different ways you can ring notes out of that instrument. You know what I mean? And this album is really, really super. The first song of the record, Rich, like, the beginning of that song is like, like, the first 10 seconds of this record, I was like, in, where do I sign?
Yeah, that's really true. Here, let's give everybody that too. Here we go. Let me give you
these are harmonics on the guitar.
This is great. This is so fun. I mean, what a great start to a record.
For sure. So, and all of the drum parts are like that too. And the reason why is, it's, you got to do the Keith Moon thing because you got to fill up so much space.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
I mean, there's just like a lot of room for the drummer to meander.
All right, let's bring this puppy to a close, because I'm the one that has to freaking listen to us.
No. There's no listening. Like, you're gonna print and upload.
There's been a couple of coughs. I have to go back and get rid of those.
No, that's
coughs.
It's audio verite, man. People are gonna feel your illness. I protest any edits, ladies and gentlemen. You're gonna get it. We
really
promise warts and all, and we're giving warts.
By the way, COVID negative. I wanted to make sure everyone knew I did take a COVID test, because I was like, oh my God, this is it. But a doctor who is a mother of one of my players on the volleyball team, she's like, influenza is going around. So I'm kind of like the Grammys. I'm behind in the time.
Have any of the three of us had COVID? I can't remember.
Nope.
Not
so that's
yet.
Interesting.
That's a knock on wood.
Hey, 43% of America has now had COVID. So it's statistically unusual that the podcast with three members would not have at least one of us. So,
all right. Well, let's.
What's your record, baby?
So here's the thing, guys. Over our time together, I noticed that sometimes you don't like clever. You don't like mid-tempo. Jeff, you keep mentioning a word. Is it twee that you mentioned?
Yes.
Well, how do we define twee?
Twee is something that's precious for the sake of being precious.
Uh-oh. Okay. Okay. So I'm a little nervous about what I'm about to roll out to all of you. You know what we could do? We could do it like a, like, what do you do with your therapist? Word association. Ready? So I'll just say a word and you guys say the first word to come to mind. Okay. Like, let's practice. Ready?
You think that's what therapy is, by the way?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure.
I'm playing word association.
So I'm going to
say, the best part of the whole pod. That's the header.
I'm going to say, ready? 1, 2, 3, sun.
Moon.
Mother. They're all going to be mother for me, Tim. You said it was therapy.
All right. The Shins.
Albuquerque.
Okay.
Is the Shins your band?
The Shins. Shoot.
There's nothing wrong with that choice.
Yeah, I know. Jeff likes the Shins.
Too narrow. Let's go with the first song, Kissing the Lip.
Shoots Too Narrow by The Shins.
Called to see if your back was still aligned and your sheets were growing grass all on the corners of your bed. But you got too much to wear on your sleeves. It has too much to do with me. And secretly, I want to bury in the yard the gray remains of a friendship scar.
This is my favorite Shins record by a lot. I know the O Inverted World is the one that made their bones and has the biggest hits.
Right.
But this one's a little bit more up tempo and put some electric guitar in, and then they drop off a cliff for me. I did not like the third and fourth records nearly as much.
I don't even know what they are.
Wincing the Night Away, and I think it's called Port of Morrow is the fourth record.
I'm trying to figure out how I came to this band.
Garden State. You came to this band from the movie Garden State,
oh,
I would guess.
I loved Garden State.
See, that one killed me. I did not like that movie, and I was so annoyed by the use of Shin's music in it that it kind of turned me off the band. But when I first heard this record independent of that movie, I did think it was really good.
Okay.
But that Garden State movie really irritated me. You were a fan, huh?
Why didn't you like it?
I thought it was a little twee. I'll be honest. Isn't that the one that got gerbils running all around the room and a big giant track in one scene? Like, every scene's got something in the background that means something. And
a lot of cleverness.
Lots. Very clever, right? Clever. And I like Zach Braff. I don't have a problem with him, but
yeah.
I did not like that movie.
Ben Barn, what do you think of the Shins? Wait, you're muted. Still muted.
Like the movie, like this record, they fell off a cliff after this record. That's where I'm at.
All right.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Wonder Twins activate.
Do they have anything to do with the Postal Service?
No, I don't think so. Do you mean the U.S. Postal Service or that band?
The Postal Service? The band. Are they not? No, one of the guys? Oh. Okay,
that's Death Cab. Isn't Death Cab for Cutie connected to the Postal Service?
I think I associate all that. Like, I accept.
There's Death a reason. Cab
and Postal Service and the Shins.
Yeah, they're all. That's
Bell
all.
And Sebastian. They're all in there together for me.
It's like a big orgy.
Travis. Rilo Kiley, except for without Jenny Lewis. All right. Have we covered everything we need to cover about 2003?
But pretty sure.
Pretty good.
Good.
Tim, you did so well. You sounded really coherent and cogent. Way to go.
Go take
Now, am I correct that we're actually going to try to do one of these while Ben is in Copenhagen?
Yeah, so when do you fly out, Ben?
Thursday.
And so Sunday night, morning.
Tuesday afternoon for Ben? How the hell are we going to figure that out?
It'll be like 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. my time, Copenhagen. 1 p.m. Tim's time, 10 a.m.
my time.
All right,
we can make that work.
Let's make sure though. Like, we will easily take a week off, and our listeners will understand. So if you guys are doing something super fun and it's family time, please do not interrupt.
When is the Nomo reservation?
That's Saturday afternoon. We're going.
So,
to all right. Saturday
so you'll have gone to Saturday Nomo.
Lunch. Oh yeah, for sure. I'll have.
That's my only requirement is that we get a Nomo update.
And by the way, it's Noma. I'm a little concerned. Let's just get the pronunciation correct, friends.
Tell Noma, we'll give them a little bit of a plug.
You might be able to get like a free dessert, like a little piece of little extra cheesecake or whatever they serve there. It'll be like a gold leaf. It'll be like a infused like squid floating in perfume.
I'm pretty sure there's going to be no free dessert. I don't think they're going to give me a free dessert.
I know.
I'm excited that
they're. But you know what? My hope is that there's an all-you-can-eat soft serve thing, like Golden Corral, so I can really get it on.
Get it, Ben. Get it all.
Noma. No,
that's actually, that's my 2004 story. That's my favorite story from being on tour. It was 2004 and we were in a hometown buffet in Kansas, all you can eat. And the kid in front of me at the soft serve just was like, gunk, and he had like a giant plate from the steak bar. And he's just going and going. He's making like a giant mound of ice cream. And his dad comes up, and I'm waiting for the dad to say what you expect.
God.
He said, "Boy, what are you doing?" Instead, he put his hand on the kid's shoulder and said, "That's right, boy. Get it. Get it all."
I thought for sure you were going to tell the story, the mirror story to my buddies and I going to Golden Corral, third year of law school, where my friend Ashby put his head under the machine and put the ice cream in his face and we got booted.
That'll do it.
Pretty much.
That's why we're an educational podcast, to make sure people at the Corral. All right, gentlemen. Have a great, great night.
Well done, fellas.
Have fun in Denmark.
Hey, safe travels.
Indeed, love y'all.
Hey, if you want to bring that boyfriend on as a guest, you feel free.
Electric Acid. Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage, behind the scenes of show business spanning over four decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour.
Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement. Inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on ElectricCast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
ElectricCast.